supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, one of the trickiest questions we've ever had to answer. Peonies planted in memory of a loved one have done so well they're covering up the names on the headstone. What should the people do who want to honor both their ancestors and the plants? We'll try to come up with an answer to this conundrum after a lot of your conundering phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Joel, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Joel. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am just fine, Joel. Where is Joel good?
I'm good up in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, north of Philadelphia.
Very good. What can we do for Joel in Doylestown?
Well, Mike, I have about an acre and a third up there, and I have about four very mature black walnut trees on my property and a good mixture of maples, oaks, and red maple trees as well. Recently, a Japanese red maple tree on my property died for no apparent reason. Looked very healthy one season, and the very next season, it died. So I took the tree out, and over a recent weekend, I planted a new one in its place, nearly the same area. Of course, when I got to work on Monday and reviewing what I did on the weekend with some of my coworkers, one coworker of mine pointed out to me that black walnut trees are notorious due to the chemicals emitted by their roots for killing all trees in their general vicinity. So now I'm worried. Did I plant my new Japanese red maple in the wrong place? Is this true? And should I move my new tree?
Incorrect. Black walnuts do secrete a plant-killing substance called juglone. The juglone is in all parts of the walnut tree. It's in the leaves that fall, it's in the branches, but it's most highly concentrated in the roots. But it only affects certain plants because you just said yourself, you have black walnuts growing alongside other mature trees. And black walnuts in Pennsylvania especially are always part of a mixed hardwood canopy, kind of a forest situation. The reason gardeners know about black walnuts so much is that the effect that the juglone has on plants is most deadly to tomatoes and is often the unexplained reason why tomato plants die. You got to look up at the canopy of these big walnut trees and presume that the roots of the trees underground are going out as far at least as the furthest branch. But if the roots of a black walnut encounter soil that a number of different plants, but mostly tomatoes, are in, the plants will suffer and die. Other plants are immune. Now, if you go to our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org, and you look in Garden Answers A to Z, and go to W or B for black walnut, I think it's under both of them, you'll be able to click through to lists of plants that are immune to the effects of juglone and ones that are the most sensitive. If I remember correctly, you can grow squash and strawberries, and of course, many lawn grasses can coexist with the roots of black walnuts.
Great.
But they will threaten some trees. Now, how long had the first Japanese maple been growing?
Well, it's been there since I bought the house, so at least it's 20 years old.
Yeah, so it probably died a natural death. I have not found Japanese maples, at least in my landscape, to be very hardy or long-lived trees. They're very ornamental, they're very attractive, all the other girls like them, but they never seem to have the lifespan of a sugar maple or a silver maple or anything else in the family.
Got it.
One thing you also have to remember, however, whenever you're planting around trees, if you're digging down to put a new tree in the ground and you encounter a massive root system, it doesn't matter what kind of tree you're planting, because the older tree is going to steal its lunch money and give it a wedgie. So,
okay.
You know, you have to make sure that the area you're planting in is relatively clear of tree roots. And for instance, if you saw no roots whatsoever, if you didn't even see the little feeder roots, the real tiny stringy ones, then there would be no way for the walnut to affect the tree, because there has to be actual root-to-root contact.
Good. I didn't see any roots, so I think I'm in good shape.
Okay. All right. Good man, Joel. And you can edumacate yourself by reading that article.
I'll take a look at it. Thanks again, Mike.
All right. My pleasure, Joel.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Beth, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being had, Beth. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
And where is Beth wonderful?
I'm in Springfield, Missouri.
Oh, okay. Not Missouri?
Only people outside Missouri say Missouri. Everyone in Missouri mostly says Missouri.
Okay. I have to tell you, way back when, many years ago, I was a guest at an herb fair in Missouri, not far outside of St. Louis, and it was in August. And I had no idea. You know, if I had been on Jeopardy and they would have gone, it's the most humid state in the country, I would, what is Louisiana? But no.
Oh, what a horrible first impression we must have given you.
I was swimming out on the street. I mean, walking from one corner to another, you needed a change of yourself.
Yes. Well, to us, whenever it's August and whenever it's February, we all stay indoors. We treat the months the same.
Yeah.
It's either way too humid or just freezing cold. So they're the same thing for us.
All right. So what can we do for Beth in Missouri?
Okay. I am in my young 30s, and I just planted my first herb garden. And they are doing very, very well. I planted them in peat moss and manure and dug up the dirt and mixed it together. And all of my herbs are very happy, except my cilantro. I am having such a hard time with it. The strange thing is that it's flowering, but right after I planted it, I went ahead and pulled the leaves off, or some of the leaves, just to try to get it going and use them in a recipe. And they did not continue leafing. It just flowered. And so I was just left with these stalks with these little tiny buds on the end. And I talked to my neighbor, and when I told her I was planting an herb garden, she said, "Can you get your cilantro to grow?" And I said, "I can't." She said, "I can't either. Everything else is just going like crazy, but not cilantro." So both of us are just in a quandary as to what is going on and what we can do.
Did you start with plants or did you sow seeds?
Plants.
Okay, that you got at the nursery in the springtime.
Yes.
And you had a warm spring.
We did. It's actually been slightly mild compared to what we're normally used to in the summertime, but I did plant them a little bit late. I planted them in early June, so I was at the very end of when everybody else had already had theirs in the ground. But I just can't figure out why all my other plants are doing okay, but my cilantro isn't.
Okay, so in the world of farming, for instance, to get a 55% return of what you would expect is considered a huge success. So it sounds like you're up at around 95 and you're complaining, you know?
Well, I really like guacamole.
Okay.
I'm left with no cilantro.
Cilantro is incredibly difficult to grow, so don't feel bad. Cilantro does not like hot weather. It does not like humid weather. Oh. And cilantro wants to flower and go to seed and kind of die. Or, you know, then become the seedy part of the plant very quickly, almost more so than basil.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to do, and there's still time. I mean, do you think you can find cilantro seeds in like a garden center or a hardware store near you or anything?
Oh, yes.
So get a pack of cilantro seeds and sow a little run of seeds. Sow a bunch of plants. They'll come up fine in this weather. They will grow great. Keep an eye on them. Do not try to harvest them immediately. Watch the center of the plant. This is the same thing you're supposed to do with basil. And as soon as the center of that plant starts to look different, starts to produce what looks like it could be a little bud in the center, you want to pinch that off. And you might have to pinch cilantro in certain types of weather every other day or every third day. Just pinching out that center part, that's going to prevent the plant from flowering and going to seed, and it's also going to give it the impulse to keep producing more leaves. But it's always going to be a short-lived plant in your garden. So that's why it's good to have a pack of seeds, sow a run, and then 2 weeks later, sow another run. And then 2 weeks after that, sow another run so that you'll always have a continuous supply. That's really the only way to get enormous amounts of cilantro is to grow a whole bunch of plants and keep pinching out the centers. And, you know, probably don't expect too much from it in like the month of August down there.
Sure. Okay. So I will correct myself and hopefully have an abundance of it next year and maybe a little bit this fall. Thank you so much for your help, Mike.
Oh, my pleasure. You take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll appear at the Spring City Library just outside of Royersford, PA on Friday evening, September 30th. And at the Huntington Valley Library on Sunday afternoon, October 23rd. I must be well read. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with one possible answer to a perplexing peony problem and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Many plants that are installed to mark a special event, the birth of a child, the passing of a loved one, they often fail to thrive, and the people who put them in the ground feel awful about it. When we get to the question of the week, we'll talk about the opposite problem, plants in memorial that perhaps are thriving a bit too much. There are worse problems to have. And let's hear about some of them in your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Justin, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me. How's it going?
How are you doing, Justin?
Not too bad. Hey, I had a question about some pear trees that we've got. They've been established here in it looks like a former homestead for an unknown amount of time. And the trunks are starting to rot out from the center, but these trees still seem to be fairly prolific fruiters. But I have a couple questions about feeding them and maybe using some systemic insecticide on them.
Oh my God! No, no, no! You're on the wrong side of the street, Justin.
Okay, he'll point me in the right direction.
Yeah, where are you?
So I'm in Eastern Washington, Spokane, Washington.
Oh, okay. Okay, and these are pear trees.
They are.
Okay,
yep.
So let's talk about your brilliant idea of the systemic insecticide. We pour this nasty chemical into the ground. It contaminates your groundwater. It kills all of the microbiological life in your soil, gets sucked up into the trees, goes into every part of the tree, and then when it flowers in the spring, would kill all the bees that come to pollinate your beautiful pear tree flowers.
Okay, so sounds like it's a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, and we don't need any of these chemicals. So, did you say you just moved into this property?
Correct.
Okay, and how many pear trees do you have?
Oh, we've got two that are left.
What does that mean? Did you back a car into two others? You know.
No, like I say, they're pretty old trees. They've kind of started to die from the inside out. So there's some of the, I think they call it the cambium layer on the outside. But basically, the center of the tree is more or less rotted out. You know, there are some pretty large cavities in these trees, but you know, it's like say somehow they're managing to keep putting on fruit and keep growing.
Yeah, that's the real truth of the matter. I mean, the tree can look awful, but what you want to look for is how it flowers and how it leafs out in the spring. Have you ever cared for fruit trees?
No, not so much.
But you actually have gotten some decent pears off these ones this year.
Yes, I have.
Okay, good. And what kind of shape were the pears in?
You know, they're pretty buggy. I'd say we maybe have one out of every five or six that are, you know, have minimal intrusions from bugs.
And do you think that these were insects that entered the fruits early in the season, or are we talking like yellow jacket and wasp damage late in the season?
No, they're fairly early.
Okay. So here's what we're going to do. I'd like you to read up a little bit on fruit tree care. But as we get into the spring, as we get to the time when these trees are going to flower, I want you to keep a good eye on them. And how tall are they?
Oh, they're probably 30 feet, 25, 30 foot.
Right, so there's large parts of the tree you're not going to be able to reach.
Correct.
So what I want you to do is the parts that you can reach, very carefully cut off any dead wood, any really old limbs, anything that doesn't leaf out. I mean, if you'd really like to get quality fruit from these and you're willing to make the investment, somebody who has the right equipment can come over and clean out the canopy, clean out all the dead wood. That would miraculously improve the health of your tree.
And that would be a spring process?
Yeah, the best time to do that, you're in but did you say you're in Spokane?
Correct, yep.
Yeah, so you have more of a winter. You could do it in the dead of winter. What I like about the spring, because then you can see what's not leafing out, and what's not flowering. Yeah, and it is a good time to do that pruning. And then if you're going to get the worker to go up into the canopy, really thin it out, really get rid of any bad-looking old wood. And I would virtually guarantee you just with that, the quality of your fruits would improve three- or fourfold.
Okay.
Because with pears, you really don't have to do a lot of fruit thinning. Unless you get so many pears hanging on a branch, it's actually splitting the branch with the weight of the pears. But you will need one product, and you'll start spraying it after the flowers fall off all your trees. And it's called Surround, S-U-R-R-O-U-N-D. And it's a micronized clay spray. It's non-toxic, and it'll make the trees look flocked. It'll make them look like Christmas trees in a department store display, but it creates a physical barrier against insects and disease. It is really the only one spray that you need. You don't even have to know what's bothering your trees. Spraying it with this micronized clay will protect them. But if you can get rid of the old wood, open them up a little bit, spray them with Surround, I think you'll get a lot of good eating. What I want you to make sure you do at the end of this season is clean up underneath the trees. Don't let any old pears that fell to the ground or any dead wood lay down there. Really clean the orchard floor, and that'll help you greatly next year as well.
Okay, well, we'll do that and then look at the Surround product. But appreciate your time, Mike. Thank you for talking with me on that, and we'll see what we do next spring.
All right, good luck, Justin.
Okay, thank you so much.
1-888-346-9499. Evelyn, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Evelyn. Where are you?
Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Very nice area. What can we do for Evelyn in Westchester?
Last year, we cleaned out our front beds and the old shrubs, but we did leave the Pachysandra.
Mm-hmm.
And where we have planted new shrubs, we can weed around because there's nothing else in the way. But where we left the Pachysandra, we have weeds that come up. We have some kind of crazy grass that I think came in the mulch. And we have ferns, all of which came in the mulch.
That you didn't have before.
No. You know, you go out there and you weed in the Pachysandra, you just can't get it all. And I'm just trying to get an idea of whether
did you
just kill the Pachysandra or...
Did you? Wasn't that a movie in the 70s? Kill the Pachysandra.
Kill the Pachysandra, yes.
Did you take the Pachysandra out and replant it or something?
No.
Did you introduce new soil or, as you said, mulch?
We had mulched, and actually when I think back on it, at one point I was trying to kill the prickly weeds that were growing in there. This was even before we ever cleaned out the beds, and I went out there and very carefully just sprayed the little weeds, and it did kill some of the Pachysandra. So while the Pachysandra was growing back, we were mulching, and then there were new weeds that came up. But how the ferns got there, I have no idea.
Yeah, that's a real mystery. And did you spread compost? Did you spread wood mulch?
The only kind of mulch we used was, yeah, like a shredded wood mulch.
Okay. Anything can come in on that junk. The grassy weeds are almost certainly going to be clumping weeds. So
yeah.
What you got to do is you just have to have a pulling party. You know, now that we're in September and the weather is often really nice, you get out there, you soak that bed really well. You wet it down for like an hour beforehand.
Uh-huh.
And then you move the Pachysandra out of the way till you can get right down to the soil and grasp the crown of the grassy weed. And then you pull it out slowly. If you do anything else, you'll just leave the root system in the ground.
Right.
But this time of year in wet soil should be easy peasy to pull those roots out and be done with that. You can even make compost from them if you're going to use a lot of shredded fall leaves as well.
Mm-hmm.
The ferns are going to be very hard to get rid of. How
yeah.
How tall are they?
They get 2 feet tall almost.
Yeah, see, I think they've been there for a long time. This is not a bad time of year. Can you get matching Pachysandra from a garden center?
Oh, I'm sure I could.
So what I would suggest is you let the ferns grow to where they're obvious.
Okay.
And then,
<They're> there.
and then you dig up that area.
Uh-huh.
And you'll get the, it's not exactly a rhizome that's underneath a fern, but it's like it. It's a big root system that all the ferny fronds are coming out of.
Mm-hmm.
And you just got to excavate it with a shovel and make sure you get all the little pieces out. And then this is a perfect time of year to replant with some fresh Pachysandra. And
mm-hmm.
then if you find out that little bits of fern are cropping up here and there, that's something where once the weather gets warm especially, you want to try to keep it under control. But you can spray that with a natural herbicide. There's herbicides that are made of soap. There are herbicides whose active ingredient is made of iron. But for the first round, you want to pull those clumps of grass out, and you want to try to get the rhizomes, or whatever they're called, of that fernery out of there, because ferns will take over a shady spot. And once they've been allowed to grow in an area for years, there's no soil left underground. It's all their root system.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No, they are surprisingly aggressive. They are one of the original plants on this planet, and they are unchanged since the days of the dinosaurs. So, but this is the best time of year to do manual removal. The weather's nice. You really want to be outside. You do a little bit of work, and you're really diligent about it and do it in sections. You may not have anything come up again next year.
Okay.
All right, Ev?
Yes. Thank you very much, Mike.
Good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Max, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How's it going?
I am just ducky today, Max. How are you, sir?
I'm good.
And where is Max good?
I'm in West Cape May, New Jersey.
Oh, okay. Down the shore.
Yeah, man.
And I got to ask you, because it's also my son's name, are you a, quote, straight Max, or are you a Maximilian or a Maxwell?
I'm a Maxwell.
Okay. What can we do for Max in West Cape May?
I've been gardening for a couple of years, and my objective really in gardening is to create healthy food for myself and keep the food bill down the best I can. And I'm not real into trying to preserve it and those things, so I just try to grow it and eat it. But that certainly limits my season. So recently I bought a 10-foot by 20-foot hoop house.
Oh, and, baby.
I'm just about done putting it together, and I'm starting to realize that I'm not sure of the next step. So my question for you is, with this hoop house, my objective is to grow through the winter. Should I be planting my stuff in the ground in raised beds? Or I often see in greenhouses these tables. I was wondering if you could give me a little advice on where I want to plant and maybe even some suggestions as to what I would have some success with in the winter.
Oh, sure. Now, the benches you're talking about, the big tables that run down the center of a greenhouse, that's kind of specialized. That's more for production. That's the kind of setup you would have to start a lot of plants. Say you weren't selling small starts at the beginning of the season. But if you've been growing your own tomatoes and peppers and things like that from seed indoors, you know, all you need is like a picnic table, something, or maybe bigger than that, you know, a big bench down at one end, the warmer end, and you can use that to start your seeds and for small plants and for things like that.
Right.
The bulk of your growing will be done kind of, quote, in the ground, but in raised beds at the same time.
Okay.
You want to frame out areas that are 4 feet wide, but presumably you're going to run the most of the length of the greenhouse to get the maximum bang for your buck.
Right.
And just make sure that you've got like a good 2 feet of walking space around the outsides of all your beds. And your hoop house is such that you can roll up the sides when it gets too hot, right? And roll them back down. Do you have a roof vent?
I do not. I was looking at some of these that look like they'll install in the end wall and kind of automatically open and close, but they're not powered. I wasn't really sure how effective those were going to be.
I recommend it highly. They are not, they are not powered directly. They're powered passively by a gas that's in a cartridge on the arm. So there's a temperature sensing gas inside part of the mechanism. And when the temperature at the top of the greenhouse gets too high, it expands that gas and that pushes the arm up to open the window.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And then when it gets cooled down, the gas contracts and it automatically closes. So, yeah, that's worth everything. So what you would do, would do now is you would frame out these beds. You know, mostly to get a dedicated area and, you know, make them 6 to 12 inches high and then fill them with good compost or topsoil. And over the winter, you'd be growing a ton of salad greens. You can grow pansies that are also edible. And then very early in the spring, a good month earlier than you would be able to do growing in the great outdoors, you would start the seeds of your summer crops. And so rather than plant your tomatoes on May 15th, you might be able to plant your tomatoes on April 15th because they're under cover. Same with your peppers and other things. So you will definitely expand your growing season. Then when you get into the second year, those tomatoes will last longer and be productive longer into the fall. Same with peppers and squash and stuff like that. So you'll eventually get to the point where you're putting your salad greens in much later every year, but growing them straight through the winter. And if we get a really cold winter, all you need to do is actually cover the salad greens with a regular row cover, like you would do if you were growing outdoors. It's very common inside an unheated hoop house in the middle of winter to see row covers over top of the plants to really trap the little bit of warmth in there. But, you know, they're like greenhouses. You know, on a sunny day that's cold, they're still going to heat up really well inside.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it, being able to go out there in the winter and feel some heat and maybe wear a T-shirt. It's pretty much one of the biggest reasons I want to do it.
Once you get good at it, and you got to get, like anything in gardening, got to give yourself a couple years to get good at it, you'll find it can produce for you 12 months out of the year.
That's the goal. Cool. Excellent. All right, great. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate your help.
All right. Good luck with your great adventure, Max.
Thanks. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll appear at the Fredericksburg, Virginia Home and Garden Show on Saturday and Sunday, October 15th and 16th, giving workshops, chatting about compost, and avoiding your toughest garden questions. Hey, at least I'm honest. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with one possible answer to a perplexing peony problem and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later on the show, many plants that are installed in memory of a dearly departed loved one fail to thrive, and the people who put them in the ground feel awful about it. We're going to tackle the opposite problem when the plants thrive so much they might be becoming a problem. We'll figure out what to do after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Brian, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. I appreciate you taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Brian. Where are you, sir?
I'm in Chesterfield, New Jersey.
Chesterfield. Now, where exactly is that?
Chesterfield. It's, if you throw a dart in the middle of the state, that's about where it is. It's right off 195 in the turnpike.
Okay. All right. I believe. Yeah, right. You're from Jersey. I should have asked the question. What exit?
Yeah, it's exit 8 on the
yeah. Okay. All right. Now we know where you are. All right. What can we do for Brian in the Garden State?
So I have some mature lilacs that are attracting European hornets, and they're tormenting my family. So other than taking out those lilac bushes, do you have any solutions for me?
I've had this problem. I've had a lilac in the ground, I guess, for about 15 years now. And this has happened to me two or three times. And the European hornets, they're huge.
Yeah, it's about the size of a chihuahua.
A chihuahua, yeah. not quite, and not nearly as cute. They're really terrifying-looking creatures. But I've never been stung. My experience has been that, and I don't know why, because I was just looking over an article we did on this years ago that had an update on it, and it seems like this activity occurs in the fall every year, in September, which to me makes no sense. I mean, clearly these hornets are chewing the bark off the lilac, which may have a special flavor to them or something, to make their nests. But the nests have been built somewhere up in a tree all summer long, and the colony is about to die out. So unless they're somehow using this for food, or, I mean, it almost doesn't make sense. It would make more sense if they did it in the spring. Now, are they actually just frightening your family, or have people been stung?
We are getting stung regularly.
Really?
Last year, I found a nest unintentionally. I was slipping over a pile of leaves and stuck a pitchfork through the nest and got stung several times. I get that. But if I'm just walking by the lilac trees, my daughter's been stung, my dog's been stung.
They're
just very territorial. They're feeding or paper grounds.
Yeah, that's so weird. Because if you've done any research on this, you know that that's not common. Most sources will even tell you they don't sting because they're not aggressive. I mean, I've had the hornets three times on my lilac, and I have been fascinated. So, I mean, I'll walk up and I'll stare at one from like a nose distance away, and they've never come for me. Are these lilacs right by your front door or something where there's a lot of activity?
Yeah, it's in a, you know, popular part of the yard, and I think that might be a difference. Like, if I walk up gently, I don't think I attract any attention, but, you know, the kids are playing, dog is running, I'm doing yard work, and I think I must be intimidating them.
Okay, so yes, I can see that. Now, have you put up any wasp and yellow jacket traps?
No.
Okay. These are things you can buy online or in a hardware store. They're simple traps. They're like big plastic clear vessels that have a small opening at the top that the insect can get in, but then they can't find their way back out again. You unscrew the lid and you put in some bait. This time of year, I find that spoiled fruit, finding a really nasty old peach, is the best deal. And you would hang a couple of these traps right near where they're feasting on your lilacs. So that's the first thing I would do. And Okay. Second, are there any flowering plants underneath your lilacs?
No.
Okay. So then you could spray the limbs of your lilac with an organic insecticide called spinosad. Now, you're not going to find that as any of the brand names, but every company that makes like an organic line of pest control products has several spinosad products, and it's S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D. The insect has to chew on the sprayed plant material to be harmed, and so it doesn't harm beneficial insects because they're not doing that. The only thing is it's toxic to bees, so you have to make sure that there's no overspray onto any kind of a flowering plant. That's why I can't use it in my raspberries, because there's a continuing flowering process there. But you could really saturate the limbs of your lilac with a spinosad product. There would be no harm to your native pollinators, to your good insects, or to your children, pets, water supply, anything like that. It's perfectly safe for us humans, but it would kill the European hornets.
Okay. Yeah, I'll try that. A trap and spinosad.
Yes, that's your best bet. And I think you're right that the reason your kids are being attacked and stung is because they're acting like kids near it, not, you know, if it were in a more out-of-the-way place, it would not be an issue for you.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, so you got to do something, and don't think twice about it. It's like a yellow jacket nest. You can't have your kids being stung all the time.
All right, thanks, Mike.
All right, good luck, Brian.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. June, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you doing today, Mike?
I am just ducky today, June. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. It's wonderful weather here in Hope, Arkansas. And I want to know, how do I start a new garden? Our ground is real marshy-like.
Oh.
And we want to do a vegetable patch.
Oh, boy, that's tough. You know, really, the biggest enemy of having a vegetable garden is wet soil. So you're in Arkansas. Do you have a high water line where you are?
Yes, we do, unfortunately.
How much land do you have?
What we're going to plant is about 8 by 10.
Oh, okay. So it's a very small area.
Yes, yeah, it's a small patch.
Now, I mean, is the whole area swampy? Do you want to do something about this?
Well, not the whole area. It's just when we've had a lot of rain this year.
Right.
We had standing water in our yard for days.
Well, you know, the smart money would say, are you going to be there for a while? You plan to stay in this house?
Oh, yes, yes.
So the long-term answer here, before you do anything else, would be to have a landscaper install what are called drain tiles. It's a very primitive underground drainage system that kind of turns the whole yard into a French drain. So you won't have that standing water. Because, I mean, after a while, you're going to get tired of having a muddy yard no matter what we do, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My nephew, he wants to grow carrots and sweet peas and green beans, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, some of that can be done, but none of it can be done on land that floods for any period of time. It'll just rot the roots. So if you have drain tiles installed underground, then that'll clear up. It'll make the whole yard more usable. Otherwise, what you would do is you would build a couple of raised beds. You said you've got 8 by 10, but you have more room to build than that, right?
Right, right. Yeah, and I know what a raised bed is. I lived in Scotland for a while. I used to watch the garden shows all the time. They talked about raised beds all the time in Scotland. I know how to do that.
Well, no, because we're going to talk about a kind of a different one. What we'd be doing here on your swampy land is we'd be putting in two raised beds that are 4 by 8 with 2 feet of walking lane in between them. And if you're not going to improve the drainage beforehand, what I'd want you to do is build them 2 feet high and fill the bottom half of the raised bed frame with sand, all-purpose sand.
Okay.
And then over top of that, a mixture of compost and topsoil. And I got to tell you, if you have a foot of compost and topsoil and a foot of sand underneath, you'll grow the world's greatest carrots.
Oh, thank you so much. And I heard a rumor that if we put human hair around the bed, that will keep the rabbits net out of it. Is that true?
Yeah, that. Good luck with that. Good luck with that. Yeah, you'll. I hope you like fat rabbits because that's what you'll get. Just to keep rabbits out of your bed, all you need is a little fence, a fence that's literally just a foot and a half or 2 feet high, something you can step over easy.
Yeah, because we work by woods, and the woods are full of rabbits and raccoons.
Well,
unfortunately, nothing we can do about the woods.
Raccoons are going to give you a hard time. I'd want you to look into having a motion-activated sprinkler to chase them away.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Raccoons can really tear up a vegetable garden, and they're dangerous to have near people. Their fecal matter spreads disease, so you don't want raccoons getting used to coming around your house. Make sure they never have access to your trash cans. Right. You know, they're very clever. They're very handy. They can open things, and so be very careful with the raccoons. They're dangerous.
Yeah, and maybe a motion action light too out there for nighttime too.
Lights don't do very much. If you want a motion activated something at night, it would be a combination of a light and a radio that goes on.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea. All right, Mike. Thank you so much for your information. And let my nephew know.
All right.
Start buying material.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. What can you do when peonies are blocking an important view? Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please get us started with this week's question.
Sure, Mike. Susan in southwestern Ohio writes, "We love your show. Listen every Sunday at noon on WYSO and have a question for you. We have 6 mature peonies around my mother's and grandmother's headstone. They are beautiful and bloom like crazy in May, but have grown so large that they are covering up their names. My dad wants to cut them back. I don't want to. Please advise." Wow, this is a tough one.
Yeah, I know. Couldn't she ask for something a little easier on me, like bringing world peace or breeding a rose that's toxic to Japanese beetles?
You have peonies, right? So you know what their growing habits are like.
Yeah, we inherited a peony that is literally planted right next to the road and directly under our mailbox. It was there when we moved in the mid-80s, and it blooms beautifully every year, despite being in a location where it shouldn't have even survived to begin with. It's in our absolute poorest soil. It gets all the road salt in the winter and almost no sun in the summer. It's even survived a couple of chip and oil procedures on that road, plus at least one full-scale resurfacing.
So they're hardy plants.
This one sure is. I tried to move it once back in the 90s, but after I had dug down a solid 2 feet, I still didn't see any sign of an actual root. So I just shoveled all the gravel and clay back on top, and it bloomed great the following season.
So what's the habit of this plant? Is it evergreen, a herbaceous perennial whose top growth disappears over the winter? What?
Well, there are some varieties called tree peonies, where a peony has been grafted onto a small tree trunk. Mine are the much more common herbaceous types, but their greenery is really persistent. I went outside yesterday to look at mine, and the leaves were still strong and green here in Pennsylvania in early September. That's a long time for a herbaceous spring bloomer to stay attractive. With spring bulbs like tulips, the leaves start to turn brown a month or two after the flowers fade. And you know, once they're no longer green, it's perfectly safe to remove those leaves.
So if these were spring bulbs, they'd only block the view for a few months. But it sounds like you have to leave this greenery alone the whole summer.
Well, you know, as long as the leaves are green, they're still recharging that root system. The longer they get to collect solar energy, the better the flower and show is going to be in the spring. But they could remove even the green leaves now in September. Those leaves have done all the photosynthesizing they're going to do, and there's no need to actually let them turn brown.
And getting rid of the leaves before they turn brown would keep things nicer looking.
Absolutely. If you cut those leaves back while they're still green in September, those plants are always going to look nice. The new shoots that appear in the spring are really attractive. I think peonies produce the nicest new growth of any herbaceous perennial. Then the flowers come out and they're big and beautiful. And again, the leaves stay nice and green all summer long.
But if they're covering up the names half of the year...
Well, if they're going to do it, the time to move them would be now. September is the ideal time to transplant or divide crowded peonies. The roots are fully charged and the plants are going dormant. But I'd hate to see them go. You know, it's really unusual that live plants are even allowed in a situation like this.
And most people write to you about the opposite problem. Plants that were meant to mark an important passage like birth or death, but failed to thrive.
So come on, let's try and save them with a couple of compromises. First, unsupported peonies can be really floppy plants. The flower heads are big and heavy, and they have a natural tendency to hang down low. So next season, let's clean up their look by using plant supports and trellising systems to keep the blooms upright. and at the same time to try and lean the plants away from the stones as much as possible. I emailed Susan back with that suggestion, and I added that I also wondered if it might be possible to just add a small additional marker at the top of the stone. One of my neighbors recently took me to visit his childhood church, whose cemetery has graves going back to the 1700s, and many of the older ones had filials and such that were added on to the tops of the actual stones. I'm sure something nice could be constructed that would match the existing stones and have the names higher up and away from the plants.
And did she respond?
Oh yeah, here, you read the email.
Thank you for your response. Funny, my dad came up with almost the same idea after we emailed you. He decided we should leave the peonies and have footstones installed that the plants won't block. Great minds think alike. Love your show. And as long as you're on, I'll be listening. Thanks for answering, Susan.
Well, thank you for a great question, Susan, and a happy ending. Well, that sure was an interesting issue to exonerate now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to poach my peonies if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org.
Please, please include your location. That means where you live. Did you know that that's your location, where you live? Please include it. Thank you.
And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares where you live, but where you will find the answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our webpage well-tended. We say hello to our new intern, Elisa Lester. Our editor is the same old Al Banks. The hardest working woman in show business, Alexis Landis, produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. I try to look busy whenever somebody from the second floor walks by, Mike McGrath. But I'll mostly be napping until I can see you again next week. The leaves look like clover, but the flowers tell a different tale. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss what to do when you let wood sorrel make you sorry you thought it was a purposeful plant. Plus your fabulous phone calls.